This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The bigger picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our health and living segment today, we're going to be discussing recovery after heart surgery. We all know what it's called. The layman calls it the heart bypass. A lot of us now want a balloon and stent, but there is still a need for heart bypasses when it comes to certain conditions. So in the studio with me, Dr. Hardeep Singh, consultant cardiothoracic surgeon from Sunway Medical Center. If you have a question for him, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or just tweet us on BFM Radio. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hardeep. How are you today?
Thanks, BFM. Doing good. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. You know, you're coming back from Singapore. You spent a reasonable amount of time there, Dr. Hardeep. And, you know, there's always this, the cardiologists now, the interventional cardiologist seems to be doing a lot of, as I mentioned, what we call PCI, so what Correct. We understand as stenting and ballooning. Now, there's very little being said about open heart surgery anymore, the heart bypass. What is the role, or when is it needed in the process when it comes to heart disease?
Yeah, so as you rightly said, there's been a surge, not just now, for the past, I would say, almost a decade now, that stenting and ballooning is going really up compared to bypass. And the reason is because technology is advancing, that's one point. But the second issue is also that the spectrum of the disease is becoming more severe. So you will probably want to do a stenting or a ballooning for a one or two vessel disease. But if you have three vessels disease and you are a diabetic and your heart function is impaired, then the best solution would be a bypass operation.
Okay, so these other comorbidities are adding to the need for a heart bypass
eventually. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. You know, and also with younger and younger people being diagnosed with heart disease, and you know, they will stent and balloon and go on medication and all of that. Do you think that at some point, and they're going to be on medication for a longer period of their life compared to, you know, people developing heart disease in their 50s or 60s. How long will that actually last? Will they eventually need a bypass?
Yeah, so coming back to that, to sort of clear this confusion, there are actually international guidelines to guide us on when and how we should treat coronary artery disease. And of course, as you rightly said, the disease spectrum is now catching up and starting quite early on. If you drive along some of the highways in Malaysia, there's a big signboard erected that's showing that the average age of a Malaysian getting a heart disease is about 58 years old. But I think it's actually coming lower than that. In fact, once you're already above 40 and you're a male and you have risk factors like diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, and you're obese, you're already in that category of going towards and progressing towards getting a heart attack.
Okay, so that needs to be taken into consideration.
Yes.
You said international guidelines. What do these guidelines actually say?
Yeah, so these guidelines are basically a compilation of research and multi-center trials. They are issued by two big bodies in the world. One is the European Society of Cardiothoracic Surgery or European Society of Cardiology. The other one being the American Heart Association. So they give us sort of a guideline, a treatment recommendation on how to go about when we get a patient diagnosed with this coronary artery disease.
Okay. And do you find it more and more difficult to make a decision as to whether or not you should carry out open heart surgery?
I think carrying out open heart surgery is quite a straightforward procedure, depending on the presentation. If you come early...
I love how you said that. It's just a very straightforward procedure.
If you come...
just rip over my sternum and get into my heart and do what you have to do.
Yes, if you come early and you go to the right place and you adopt the right mode of a treatment, then I think you're pretty safe. If you have a disease diagnosed on you and you sort of delay or become hesitant of coming to get treatment and the heart function goes down, the disease progresses, you go into a more complicated stage and you may end up getting a more complex surgery than the originally scheduled or proposed intervention.
Okay, and once you do a heart bypass, does that mean that there could be a chance you will need another heart bypass later on?
Oh yes. So this disease medically is called atherosclerosis. It's got no cure up to date. There's a lot of research going on. So once you do a bypass, you should take care of your contributing or what we call risk factors. So the common risk factors in this region, most likely would be if you're a smoker, you have to stop smoking. If you've got diabetes, you have to make sure the control is good. Same goes for hypertension and hyperlipidemia. And of course, after that, you need to go on a program where you will actually sort of discipline yourself when it comes to eating food, having some amount of exercise and taking your medications regularly and be compliant to it.
Okay, so, but you know, there are also a lot of risks involved in open heart surgery. How do you talk to your patients and even the family members about it?
Yeah, so I think this conundrum about open heart surgery, because it's a major surgery, so the moment you tell the patient or the family that he needs to go for surgery, you see all the eyes popping out. And everybody wants to sort of avoid it. I think that is pretty natural. It is okay to have fear, but I think a good communication with the patient and his family, explaining everything in detail, what is the surgery for, how is it going to be carried out, what are the related complications, and how is the recovery process going to be, and how is it going to benefit him at the long run, I think that way it's quite easy to convince people to go for surgery.
You also said technology has advanced very much. And over the years that you have been practicing as a cardiothoracic surgeon, have you seen the way in which you carry out the surgery? Has it evolved over time?
Oh, yeah, surgery has evolved quite a bit. Although the principle remains the same, but there are new techniques that we can embark on, mainly minimally invasive surgery for selected diseases. So that way you have smaller cuts, and the pain and the trauma you go through is much less, and you can leave the hospital much earlier than expected.
This is for a heart bypass?
Yes.
Minimally invasive?
Yes, minimally invasive.
You don't have to rip open somebody's sternum
anymore?
No,
you can go through the side of the chest wall.
Okay.
But that is not for all the patients. So selected patients that are suitable, you can go for this procedure.
Okay. And of course, the outlook for patients undergoing heart surgery, what does that look like in terms of treating or even managing the disease?
Okay, so the outlook actually looks good if you come early. So the reason you have to come early once you're diagnosed of the disease basically depends on the heart function and how well you control your risk factors. So once we can get everything to the best possible level, that means normal blood sugar or near normal blood sugar levels, normal or near normal blood pressure, and if you are smoking, you can quit or stop smoking and you come for the surgery. Usually the average risk is about 1% to 2%, which includes running into complications like bleeding, infection, heart rhythm issues, organ failure and death.
Okay, so as compared to minimally invasive procedures, how would that compare in terms of preoperative symptoms and complications? Does that make a big difference?
Yeah, I think minimally invasive, the main benefit would be faster recovery, and you can go back to your normal life much faster than the conventional operation. But I think one thing we need to clarify is that a lot of people are afraid of first the surgery, second thing mainly is the pain. So a lot of people think that bypass surgery is a very painful procedure. Actually, it's not. If you take a pain score of 0 to 10, 10 being the most painful medical procedure, bypass surgery is somewhere about 4 or 5. And just with mere Panadols or maybe something slightly stronger, you may actually bring down the pain to maybe 1 or 2, or some patients don't even experience pain. Okay. So it all actually falls back to how high or how low your pain threshold is and how you prepare yourself when you come for the surgery.
Okay, so that's key. And you will guide them through that? Or
yes.
who guides them through
that? So usually when they come to the clinic, we have a very detailed discussion about the surgery. We tell them why we need it, what is the benefit, what could go wrong, and what is expected of you when you go home, and which are the different components or sectors of the hospital that you'll be visiting, the OT, the waiting room, the ICU, the general ward, and then the teams that you will meet, just not the anesthesiologist, the surgeon, maybe the cardiologist, maybe the physiotherapist and the cardiac rehab team. So there's a whole group of people actually helping you once you come into the hospital. It's a journey that we try to make it as pleasant as possible.
That's if you have the liberty of time. If you don't, what happens?
Yeah, so if you are in an emergency situation, then of course you have to discuss with the surgeon. And at that time, mostly it's a matter of life and death. So if you do not do the procedure, the chances of you not making it is going to be pretty high. So we need to rush you to the operation theatre or arrange or schedule the surgery as soon as possible. So at that time, the risk will be high. It's not going to be 1% or 2%. It's maybe more than that. Yeah. And also it depends on the complexity of the procedure. If they are added more than one or two procedures that we have to do on the heart, then the risk gradually will increase.
What are some of the other procedures that you do to the heart?
Yeah. So sometimes if you just ignore your coronary artery disease and you go into a stage of heart failure, so the heart dilates and becomes big, and then your valves that are present in the heart, there are four of them, some on the right side or the left side start leaking more than normal. So you go into a condition called heart failure. So when we treat you and we deal with this kind of patients, we will probably need to not just intervene on the coronary artery disease, i.e. doing the bypass. We will also need to either repair or replace the valve. So this will add to the complexity of the surgery and also the risk.
So I think a distinction needs to be made between heart failure and a heart attack. Yes. You just quickly want to make that distinction.
Usually heart attack is when you get your arteries occluded and you come into the hospital because of pain, you have a sudden attempt. And heart failure is usually when you have a problem, you have multiple small heart attacks in the past and you have ignored it or it's been missed or you have got very poorly controlled diabetes, so you can't feel the pain, much of a pain. So you have more of tiredness, reduced activity. So you keep on lingering around until the heart function really drops and becomes bad. Then you start having swelling of the legs, water pooling up in the lungs where you can't breathe. So in that stage, you're actually already in heart failure when you come to the hospital.
Okay, and that's why the fluid in the in the legs is a symptom of something not quite right with the heart.
Correct.
Most of the time, it's a symptom of possible heart failure, perhaps?
Yeah, most of the time, it would be heart failure.
Okay, not a heart attack.
Not a heart attack.
Okay. And what can patients expect during post-operative recovery? The length of the recovery, returning to daily routines. You make it sound a lot simpler. Back in the day, the downtime was very high. Has that reduced over time?
Yeah, actually, it's reduced quite a bit over time. Currently, because we work on a concept where we've got a few members in the team. As I mentioned earlier, the physiotherapist, the cardiac rehab program. So what we do is that after surgery, usually the patient comes to ICU and the patient stays there for about a day or two. So if there are no issues, usually 4 to 6 hours after surgery, we stop the sedatives or what we call sleeping medications and the patient is wide awake. And we remove the tube from the mouth, which is attached to the ventilator, and he or she could actually eat or drink within the next 6 to 8 hours. So you would have some minor issues like maybe some stomach upset, nausea, headache, giddiness, which is all due to side effects of the medications, mainly the anesthesia. And after that, as days go by, it will get less and less. So the stay in the ICU is probably about a day or two. And then the second day itself, you can start walking. There will be a team teaching you how to go back on your foot and go about doing your activity. And then you transiently go to the high dependency ward. And then from there, you go to the general ward. So the entire stay in the hospital will usually be about 5 to 7 days, provided that you do just one procedure. That means just a bypass. If the procedure is more complex, you've got multiple procedures done on yourself, you probably may need a longer stay than the usual.
And this compares to in the past, how long was that?
Yeah, previously, I think everybody was a bit unsure and they used to keep patients for maybe about an average 2 weeks to make sure everybody's all right before they go home. And the patient himself or herself is relatively afraid to go home early or go and recover at home. But nowadays, it's a bit different. I think everybody is educated and they're well aware of how the healing process goes on. So by the time you leave the hospital, you can do everything. Eat, drink, go to the toilet, have your shower. There's only a couple of things that you can't do. You should not be pushing anything heavy or lifting anything heavy because the bone has been opened up, the sternum, as you mentioned earlier, and then needs a stress-free sort of a period for it to heal, which usually happens in about an average 6 weeks.
Okay, yeah. So the sternum takes a little bit longer to actually recover. So in the time that you're in ICU, are you saying that for the 1 or 2 days, you're actually dependent on the machine to breathe?
Not really. If you've been prepared well for the surgery, it's an elective surgery, you've got no other organs involved, and it's a straightforward bypass, then you would be extubated or removed off the ventilator within 4 to 6 hours after surgery.
Okay.
Unless you get into a complication, then you may need the breathing machine a bit longer than usual.
Why do you need the breathing machine in the first place?
Yeah, because usually this surgery is done under general anesthesia. So to make sure that during surgery, you do not know what's happening. So the only people who pay attention to you are the doctors and the nurses and a team of perfusionists who run the heart-lung machine in the theatre. And the patient's job is just to stay calm, relax and go for a sleep. And when you wake up, everything should be sorted out for you.
Okay, and so the ventilator is to help you breathe initially?
Yes, the ventilator is to help the patient breathe, because when you give general anesthesia and you put them to sleep, the medications usually paralyze you, so you can't use your normal breathing muscles to breathe.
Okay, so that's why.
Yes.
Okay, all right then. We're discussing recovery after heart surgery. If you have a question for Dr. Hardeep Singh from Sunway Medical Center, he's a consultant cardiothoracic surgeon. Give us a call. It's 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. When we come back, we want to find out more about long-term follow-up care, cardiac rehab programs. Now, there's such a thing as that. Some of the challenge that you face in long-term recovery and follow-ups, share that with us. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, it's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Dr. Hardeep Singh, consultant cardiothoracic surgeon from Sunway Medical Center, in the studio with me. We're discussing recovery after heart surgery. Basically, we're discussing what happens after a heart bypass, better known to most of us as a bypass. Now, Chris is asking Dr. Hardeep, what are the most likely complications during heart surgery and how are they usually addressed?
Okay, so the common complications after heart surgery basically would depend on the spectrum of the patient, meaning that if the patient comes in without any organ failure, his blood tests are all normal, he has diabetes, which is well controlled, hypertension, which is well controlled, and he doesn't smoke, then the chances of him running into problems will be very less, in a percentage of, I would say, 1% to 2%. And things that could go wrong generally are classified into two categories. One are the common complications, or general, what we call general complications. They may be anything from wound infection, pneumonia, some blood clots in the legs, or the heart rhythm going abnormal, or what we call atrial fibrillation. The more specific complications related to heart surgery would be bleeding, organ failure, or death. But if you come in early, and as I said before, it's a well-prepared patient, elective surgery, and you don't have organ failure, you're relatively a low-risk patient, so the chances of this happening is pretty low.
Okay, so give us a call. The number is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, when it comes to heart bypasses, how long does a patient follow up with you?
Okay, usually we see them before the surgery and prepare them. So after the surgery, you can adopt a few regimes depending on what the center and how the surgeon does it. So usually upon discharge, we would explain them in detail how to go about taking care of themselves at home. We give them a few instructions on what are the do's and the don'ts. And we would see them again in the clinic somewhere around 4 to 6 weeks after the surgery. That's the first follow-up. If they're doing well, then after the second follow-up, usually it's about 3 months after the surgery. If they're doing well again, then the third follow-up will be 6 months after the surgery. And at 1 year, if everything is okay, we usually discharge the patient back to from where he came from, either to the referring doctor or the referring hospital to for them to recover.
Okay. And do most patients do well?
Oh, yes, yes. So generally, most of them do well.
Who are those who don't do well?
So the people or the patients that do not do well actually are in this category where they come with some form of organ dysfunction, meaning they have some issues with their kidney, they have some issues with their liver, they are chronically smoking, so their lungs also have some issues, or they are very obese patients, or they come for a second time surgery. So all these patients fall into a group where the risk or complications of things going not according to plan, it's a bit higher than the normal category. So they probably will come in the moderate to high risk category. And their stay in the hospital is not going to be a straightforward 5 to 7 day hospital. They probably need more time and more help to recover and come back to what they were before.
Okay. There's such a thing as a cardiac rehabilitation program. What does that entail?
So the cardiac rehabilitation program are actually a group of people that dedicate themselves to help patients who have undergone either surgery or suffered heart attacks, or people who have come to the hospital to seek treatment for heart diseases, any heart disease. So they help them with many things on how to go about living their daily lives, what is the prescribed exercises, to educate them, tell them to make sure that their medications are taken on time, and what the kind of diet they can actually take and what they should avoid, and how to go about knowing when trouble is going to trouble you to come back and see the doctor.
Okay, and what is that? Could you give me an example?
So some patients after surgery may go back and have pneumonia. They may have coughing, excessive coughing because they have been on a ventilator during surgery, or they may have some collection of water in the lungs or around the heart, or the wound itself may give you some minor issues that you become infected and some pus coming out from the wound. So all these things are taught to the patients, and when they have these issues, then they come back and see the doctor so that we can manage them accordingly.
Okay, we have a call. John, you have a question.
Yes, hi, John. Hi, doctor. I'm John here.
Yep, hi.
Yeah, I just want to inquire. You see, I what has happened is in the last 5 months, I had a heart attack.
Yes.
And it was 100% blocked.
Okay.
And right now, so what happened was I went through an angioplasty and things like that.
Okay.
And they have given me medication with blood thinner and whatnot.
Yes.
And I've been going regular exercise. And what's happened now is I understand when they did the last test, there was some scarring on my heart.
Okay.
So in view of that, at times I do feel breathless.
Okay.
Is it something common? And how long does it take for one to recover from that?
Okay. So, John, you didn't do a heart bypass, did you?
No, I didn't. Okay. I just did an angio. Yeah.
Okay. All right, then. Got it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So usually what you describe, John, is that you had a heart attack, so there has been some damage to your heart muscle. So that's why the doctor told you that you've got some scarring there. Now, the damage may be irreversible or it may be reversible. So if you've got some procedure like an angioplasty or a stenting done with the aim of restoring blood to the blood muscle, so if that damage is reversible, then you will feel better as time goes by. But if this damage is already irreversible, then it will just prevent or protect the other part of the heart that is still functioning well from going into heart failure or getting the optimum blood supply that it should be.
Okay. So what is that? Is there a long-term solution for John?
There's no long-term solution. Basically, you just have to follow up to make sure you're compliant to your medications, you control your risk factors, and if you have a problem again, then you probably need another intervention.
Okay. We have a question here from Ms. Goh. She says, my dad has aorta aneurysm and his doctor suggested a T-bar procedure. Dad is 77 and he decided to forego the option. We've tried talking to him, but Dad has decided, so we'll have to respect his decision. So what can we do to retain as much as, you know, Dad, we can as possible?
Yep. So I think this aortic aneurysm, from what I understand, I don't know where is it placed, whether is it in the thoracic aorta or whether is it in the abdominal aorta. But from what you are describing, because it's a T-bar, most likely it may be somewhere in the abdominal aorta. So usually these aneurysms happen due to few reasons. They can be idiopathic or unknown, or if you have high blood pressure and the pressure is not controlled well, that part of the vessel can actually swell up. Or if you have some weakening or defect in the blood vessel due to aging process or some connective tissue disease, that too can contribute. So since he's an elderly patient and you have decided that you don't want to go for the procedure, so the only way that you can stop things from getting worse is continue the follow-up with the doctor. Make sure you take all your medication, especially for cholesterol, for high blood pressure. And if the size keeps on increasing, then I think you may want to rediscuss with your doctor and maybe discuss with your dad too to see if he needs a procedure.
Okay. From your patients, do you find that they're willing to actually make changes? Because you talked about cardiac rehab and, you know, you spoke about exercise and taking medications on time and your diet, but are they open to making these changes?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And we face a lot of difficulties there. So usually when somebody gets sick, they get the bypass done. For the first 6 months to 1 year, everybody's a good boy or a good girl. And then after that, they meet a lot of other friends who give them a lot of different ideas. And they go and meet go into Mr. Google or Mr. Yahoo. And that gives them loads of information which may not be correct. So they think that, you know, let's just go back to the normal lifestyle and do what we were doing before. And anyway, we still got a chance second time around. So that is not really the right approach. So I think it's very important to convince to them that there is no cure for this disease. The surgery we do is a palliative surgery wherein we restore blood flow to the heart. But the bypass graft itself can get blocked. And if you do not control your risk factors, that means diabetes, high blood pressures, cholesterol, or you continue to smoke and you don't want to exercise and you're not compliant to your medications, the problem is going to come back pretty soon.
Okay. And you will need another bypass.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. How long can you keep bypassing?
Well, it depends on the condition of the heart and how fit you are, basically. Okay. There are people who have gone for 4 or 5 bypasses in their lifetime, and they're still going on. So it actually depends on you.
Okay.
But there will be a time and a point where the doctor will say, no, we can't do more because it's a very risky procedure and the risks outweigh the benefit. Then that's where you have to stop and get it in you, sink it in you that there's nothing else that can be done.
What happens after?
Then the only solution, I guess, is either to get a heart transplant or if you think that you can afford an artificial heart, which is not available in this country, but it's available in the Americas and Europe, and you want to go there, then that's an option.
Both of which almost impossible.
Yeah.
Okay. Exercise, you spoke about exercise.
Yes.
How often can, or how hard can somebody start with exercise, especially for those who have been athletic in the past?
Yeah, so exercise is actually something that a lot of people are unclear about. So many people actually think that once you've got a bypass done, you cannot exercise, which is wrong. You're actually taught once again how to gradually increase your exercise capacity to a point where you're comfortable with it. And it does not mean that you have to prepare yourself for some Olympics or Asian Games. Yeah, the minimal everybody has to do is about 30 to 45 minutes of walking every day, 7 times a week. But if you think that your body can take it more, you think you can take it more, and you've got some good supervision to do it, and you're doing it the right way, then of course you can do more than that. So if you're, for example, if you were a swimmer before surgery, after surgery, once your wounds heal, you have recovered fully, you can definitely go back to swimming.
Swimming is all right?
Yeah, swimming is all right. Once the wounds are all healed, you're completely comfortable with your exercise capacity, you can start swimming all over again. You can go cycling, you can go running, you can do whatever you want to do.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And but it really depends on your how active you were before?
Will
you ever go back to the optimal level of what you were
before?
Yes,
you can. I've got many patients who were cyclists, who were runners, and they came for surgery with... done the surgery on them, and they've gone back in their marathon world, gone back cycling, and they're pretty happy about it because they can do more than what they were doing before.
Right.
But this group of people are actually people that come early. When they know they have a problem, they seek medical advice and they get the problem sorted out as early as possible rather than waiting till the disease actually progresses to a point where you're in heart failure. So once you're in heart failure, once you reach in that stage, then surgery may not be that straightforward and the recovery process will be also slower than what is expected.
Is there any exercise you would say please don't do?
Weightlifting. You shouldn't weightlift. Shouldn't go to the gym and try to be Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you should avoid that at least for the first maybe 3 to 4 months and then consult your doctor and gradually start with a little bit of weights. And if you're comfortable, then you increase it gradually. But generally, weightlifting is not recommended for people who have got bypass, at least in the first year.
Because of the sternum or
because
of the heart?
Yes, because of the sternum. Mainly it's because of the sternum.
What is the risk?
The risk is about 1% to 2%. But then again, it's very difficult to predict who are these people going to fall into this percentage.
What happens?
Yeah, what happens is the wound may give way, the sternum may give way, you may have some malunion or you may have some fracture of the sternum or the wires may get displaced or get cut and then you have to come back for a second procedure.
Okay, so your rib can actually separate.
Yeah, the bone where we have cut sometimes can have a problem, although it's rare. But we can have a problem.
Okay. Psychosocial impact after heart surgery. How do people cope with that? Fear of death, drastic changes to their daily routine, changing in the quality of life, their mental health. How do they deal with
that? Yeah, so I think the main problem is always the fear factor. And I think it's quite normal to be afraid when you have to go for a surgery. I myself, if I go to the dentist, I'm already in palpitations. Although I do surgeries almost every day, but
something
I think this is
about those dentists,
yeah.
Isn't it?
But I
think
this
the
is
chair.
This, but I think this is something normal. So the only way to allay fear and sort of bring it to a level that is acceptable or something a level that the patient can manage is to have a very healthy discussion, reassure the patient, explain the procedure, and reassure them that this is a very common operation done and it's done almost on a daily basis. And it's actually a very safe procedure.
They won't believe you.
Yeah, if they don't believe, then we still have to go on. We show them pictures, video clips. We give them CDs. And then we get them to meet previous patients that we have actually operated on to give them that confidence that actually surgery is not as bad as what you think it is.
But every person is different.
Yes, you're right. Every person is different.
How do you deal with that as a doctor?
I think it's just talking, and convincing.
Yeah, that's just on a mental state.
Yes,
but
yes.
Even in terms of physically and what you are going to do to this person, outcomes will depend on one person to the other. It will differ from one person
to the
other.
True, that's true.
Yeah, because all of us are made differently.
Yes.
So in the multidisciplinary team, post-recovery, will they also look at psychosocial impact?
Yes. We have actually that covered. Mainly, the surgeon usually has a healthy discussion with the patient and the family. But should that be needed more than what it is, then we got a social service team that can come aboard and help them. And these days, we even have nurses and rehabilitation team members that can actually go to your home to help you with the recovery. Because what happens is some people are pretty uncomfortable in the hospital, which I guess most of us are. Once they reach there, they want to go home as early as possible. And when we give them a time frame, like for example, you can go back in 5 days, and that 5 days come up and you can't go home, we can see that some amount of depression and upset feeling sets in. So what we try to do is we try to make sure we get them fit as early as possible to leave hospital. And we have this, what we call people visiting them in their houses, helping them go about their usual lives, checking on them, chatting with them. And sometimes we also form groups where all of the previous patients or the patients that are going to have surgery, they chat with one another to make things easier for them.
Okay. Yeah. What about non-medical interventions? Yoga, meditation, breathing, positive thinking. Who talks to them about all of that?
Yeah, I think that's also important. Usually we have a psychologist on board if needed to. But generally, all these things, we sort of tell the patient ourselves that if you want to do a little bit of this, you remain positive, you want to do some yoga, that's fine. And if they need more, then we can get more team members involved in delivering the service.
Okay, but those are also options.
Huh? Yes,
okay.
Those are options.
We'll come back and continue the discussion. I think one area we want to touch on is the strong support network that's needed, especially from family members, and how do they help with this post-recovery rather than be a hindrance. The importance of prevention, Dr. Hardy, we need to talk about that.
Yes.
And there's a recent study published that found the use of a certain pill, can sort of help with certain heart situations. We'll come back and find out more up after the market update on BFM 89.9.
The bigger picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, and if you've just joined us, welcome. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Hardeep Singh, consultant cardiothoracic surgeon, in the studio with me from Sunway Medical Center. We are discussing recovery after heart surgery. In particular, we're talking about a heart bypass and how we recover from that. We've covered quite a lot of ground, Dr. Hardeep, but let's talk about the strong support network in post-recovery. Let's talk about family members. How do family members, and I know a lot of them they mean well, but sometimes it can be difficult for the patient to recover with family members having their own ideas. How do you help them deal with that?
Yeah, so I think the important part is that when we discuss the surgery from the start, we don't just get the patient involved, we get the family members involved, and we ensure it that most, if not all, of the family members are present. And we try to sort of designate a spokesperson from the family, so that if there's any issues, that we can communicate with that one person. And usually the spokesperson is either the spouse, either the husband or the wife or the brother or the sister, depending on who is going for surgery. And we give them the general briefing on how the surgery is going to go about, as if they are the ones that are going to undergo. And we tell them there are some certain things that they have to do, and there are certain don'ts that they make sure that never occur. For example, before the surgery, we make sure that we tell all the family members and the friends that if you have got any cough, cold, flu, and the patient is going for surgery, it's best to keep away from the patient, a simple thing like that. We sort of educate them to support the patient, to tell them, to remind them to keep on taking their medications. There will be some medications that you need to stop before surgery, usually about 5 to 7 days, mainly the blood thinners. We get the family involved, telling them of where the patient will be, take them on a hospital tour, show them the waiting area, where the operation theatre is, where the ward is and where the ICU is. We also briefed the family on what are the things that could go wrong, and should things go wrong, what would we be doing as doctors and as a team in the operation theatre. And when it comes to recovery, we usually get the family to help the patient. By and large, when the patient leaves the hospital, he or she is pretty independent. As I mentioned earlier, the only things that you would want to avoid is pushing anything heavy or lifting anything heavy in simple terms. The family could actually help by reminding him or her to take her medication regularly. Some patients who are a bit slow in healing, have got a lower pain threshold, probably will need some kind of help with their daily activities, mainly having a shower or going to the toilet or walking around in the house. And the family members could also help by learning from the physiotherapists on how to do the usual breathing exercises, to look out for some small things or some common things that could happen after surgery, like wound infections, if the patient is having some fever, if he's not behaving normally, or is having some swelling over the legs, so that they could help and advise the patient and come back earlier to the hospital to seek the appropriate treatment.
What are some of the common challenges you face with family members?
Yeah, I think the common challenges that everybody wants to know everything, and they don't come at the same time. They come at different times. And especially when there is a complication that has happened, usually everybody is, I think it's quite natural being human, that they will want the best for their loved ones. So at that time, sometimes there may be some problems trying to deliver that message across that a complication may have happened. Or sometimes if a particular patient is lying by the side of another patient, there's a quick comparison. You look at that patient, he's okay. And how come my mom or my dad is still not left the hospital? It's already been 7 days. So I guess the only way is to keep on reassuring them and telling them that the healing process is slower than expected. And it's very difficult to predict that because when we have an injury to the body, how the body responds to injury is very different in every individual. So generally, a person who is optimistic, who is very forward-thinking and positive when he comes for the surgery, he may have some fear, which is normal. These are the people that actually leave the hospital very early. But the people, the group that comes in very unsure, very afraid, and has a lot of doubts, these people generally leave the hospital a bit later because they need a lot of reassurance, and generally they have more of complications as compared to the people who are a bit more positive thinking.
What's your advice to the second group of people?
So what we tell them, I think basically as surgeons, we can only reassure them, to tell them that everything is going as per planned. There are some complications that have come in the way, but we are at the present able to take care of these problems. And we keep on updating them regularly, communicating with them regularly to tell them that what the progress and how the treatment progress is going should a complication arise.
Okay, so mindset before is crucial for the patient.
Yes.
There's a recent study published in The Lancet that found the use of a poly pill, which contains four medications, blood-thinning aspirin, a cholesterol-lowering statin, and two drugs to lower blood pressure. Now, this has been found to cut the number of heart disease and strokes by a third. Your thoughts on the use of poly pills?
Yeah, I think basically what we are trying to get at is to control the risk factors, to keep them at bay, meaning that if you have diabetes, to keep the levels at the normal level, if you have high blood pressure, to bring the pressure down, and if the cholesterol is high, to bring it down. So you can do it any way you want.
This is if you have those comorbidities.
Yes, if you have those comorbidities. You can do it any way you want. You can either opt for a poly pill or you can opt for separate individual pills. But the take-home message is no matter whatever you do, whichever pill you take, the control is essential. So it doesn't really matter whether you're taking a combination of X medicines or whether you're taking a combination of Z medicines. It's basically your blood test results and how you control these levels with all these medications.
Over the long term?
Over the long term.
Okay. And how do you drill into patients the importance of prevention?
Yeah, so the prevention, I guess, once we have a family member who's going for bypass, who's got diagnosed of a heart disease, we try to explain to them and tell them that the other family members down the line are also at risk. So it will be prudent and advisable that you go for some form of health screening, especially people who have got very strong family history, meaning the grandfather's got heart disease, the father's got heart disease, and the sons and the brothers also have heart disease. So we advocate health screening and simple things like checking your blood sugar, your cholesterol. It's back to all these risk factors. And quit smoking. Smoking is a no-no. And do your little bit of exercise. I think that will keep you going for many, many years.
Okay. Your message on prevention or your message on heart bypasses?
Yeah, so my message is that it's a major surgery. We all know that. But it's not something that you should fear, something you should run away from, something you should avoid. Talk to your doctor. Let him evaluate you, assess you, risk stratify you, and tell you what are the possible things that could happen. Because at the end of the day, whenever a surgeon tells you that you need to go for heart surgery, he's usually talking about the risks and the benefits. So when the benefits outweigh the risks way, way, way beyond that what it is described, then I think it's safe to go for surgery. But if you come in an emergency situation, for example, you've got a big heart attack and you need a fix by surgery, or you've got an aortic dissection, you need a fix for surgery. In these kind of situations, the risk is definitely going to be higher. The chances of running into complication is going to be higher. But I guess if you do not do anything, then you don't have any other option. You're either going to go and meet your creator, or rather take the risk and hope to go through the surgery smoothly and recover happily.
Mm-hmm. So you just want to be on the alert?
Yes.
Even before?
Correct.
You would say all of us should actually go and get a blood test done?
Yes, I think that's pretty good. If you can go maybe say 6 monthly or yearly, get a health screening, get some blood tests done. If you're already worried, you've got all these risk factors, go for a stress test, go for a CT scan, check your heart, and I think you'll be actually buying a lot more years to your life as compared to if you did not do it.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Hardeep Singh, consultant cardiothoracic surgeon from Sunway Medical Center, joining us on the topic of recovery after heart disease on Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.